Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. Barr's Attorney General nomination is a threat to civil rights. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note, this call may be recorded. I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is my pleasure to turn the program over to Christine Lucius.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining today's call. My name is Christine Lucius. I'm the Executive Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs for the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations working toward an America as good as its ideals. Next Tuesday, the Senate Judiciary Committee will hold the confirmation hearings for William Barr, the President's nominee to be the next U.S. Attorney General. This nomination comes at a critical moment for our nation. The current president's flagrant disregard for democratic norms, the rule of law, and the civil and human rights of our nation's most vulnerable threatens to totally destabilize our nation. The confirmation of the next chief law enforcement officer is one of the most important issues the Senate will consider. And the Senate has got to get it right. The Senate should only confirm someone with the necessary independence to run the Justice Department consistent with its mission. That requires someone who has a demonstrated commitment to enforcing our nation's federal civil rights laws on behalf of our nation's most vulnerable. That's non-negotiable. Under former Attorney General Sessions, we saw nearly unbridled disdain for the Justice Department's vital role as the nation's primary agency for protecting people's rights. For nearly 2 years, Sessions destroyed families and communities by attacking voting rights, restarting the war on drugs, failing to enforce constitutional policing policies, rolling back protections for LGBTQ individuals, and justifying officials separating children from their parents and locking immigrant children in cages. As you will hear from the speakers on today's call, Mr. Barr's record suggests more of the same. Our families and our communities deserve better. An attorney general who will protect the rights of all, not criminalize our most vulnerable. Our civil rights are at stake. Members of the Senate Judiciary Committee have an obligation next week to seek assurances from Mr. Barr that he will not be Sessions 2.0. He must demonstrate he will not continue to turn back the clock on civil rights, and he must demonstrate he will be truly independent from the divisive and lawless president who nominated him. The nominee has the burden of proof in these hearings, and the more we learn about Mr. Barr's record, the heavier that burden is getting. We will now hear from our speakers. First up is Janae Nelson, Associate Director Counsel at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, Inc. Janae?
Thank you, Christine, and thanks to everyone for participating on today's call. I'm very pleased to join this excellent lineup of speakers to discuss this urgent matter. As Christine said, I'm Janae Nelson, the Associate Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. LDF is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that's been separate from the NAACP itself since 1957, although LDF was originally founded by and shares the NAACP's commitment to equal rights. We were founded by Thurgood Marshall in 1940, and LDF has worked shoulder to shoulder with the Department of Justice across Democratic and Republican administrations to ensure the fair enforcement of our nation's civil rights laws. And I'd like to pick up on some of the themes that Christine sounded in her opening. From February 2017 until December 2018, Jeff Sessions established policies and programs and practices at DOJ that undermined the civil rights of communities of color, grossly undermined their civil rights. And we must interrogate how William Barr's approach to civil rights enforcement and the protection of the rights of people of color and other marginalized communities will rectify the deep harm that Jeff Sessions created. We must know that he will not only protect and enforce civil rights, but that he will restore fairness and decency to the chief law enforcement agency in our country, that he will reverse any and all policies and practices that his predecessor installed to undermine equality and justice for all. We are at a time when schools are resegregating and black and brown students are increasingly attending racially isolated, high poverty schools. And the Trump administration has made a concerted effort to dismantle diversity from kindergarten through college. From rescinding departmental guidance on discriminatory school discipline policies to leading investigations into Ivy League institutions regarding their racial diversity program, this administration has been on a warpath against educational equity. Similarly, the Department of Justice has also become this administration's voter suppression agency. In one of his first acts as Attorney General, the Sessions-led DOJ sided with the state of Texas in an effort to impose a discriminatory photo ID scheme, asking a federal court of appeals to allow the state to enforce a law that the lower court found to be discriminatory under the Voting Rights Act and the 14th and 15th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution. And this is in a case where the Department of Justice had worked with civil rights groups to help challenge this discriminatory law and then did a 180 right after Sessions became installed as the new head of DOJ. DOJ also sided with Ohio in an effort to unfairly purge voters from the roll. In the area of policing and criminal justice reform, Jeff Sessions revived the private prison contract that had been ended by the previous administration and abandoned the department's obligation to ensure that criminal laws are administered fairly and without regard to race. Despite a decades-long history of police abuse in Baltimore and Chicago, DOJ took steps to prevent the approval of consent decrees to address documented civil rights violations. These are agreements DOJ is authorized to negotiate pursuant to the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994. The Trump DOJ has also attacked the LGBTQ community. It issued a sweeping religious exemption guidance, which invited taxpayer-funded federal agencies, government employees, and government contractors to legally discriminate against LGBT communities and employees as long as they cite a religious belief as the reason for doing it. It also reversed a policy that provided non-discrimination protections for transgender people in the workplace under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Jeff Sessions was the messenger when the Trump administration announced its plans to end DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, an Obama-era immigration policy that protected innocent youth from deportation. It's a disastrous and cruel decision that is still hanging in the balance and could devastate the lives, and is devastating the lives, of hundreds and thousands of children and families. It is yet another example of this administration's willingness to fan the flames of xenophobia and hostility toward people of color. This is the legacy that the prior Attorney General and the Department of Justice that Barr will lead if he is confirmed. And Barr's record demonstrates that he also supports mass incarceration, opposes sensible criminal justice reform, is hostile to LGBTQ rights, and objects to any legislative checks on executive power. These are concerning attributes of a potential appointment to lead the Department of Justice. Senators must determine whether Barr is going to continue to weaponize the Justice Department and eviscerate civil rights protections, or whether his records suggest that he can repair and restore integrity and fairness to the Justice Department, whether he can ensure that all persons are treated equally under the law. We need an Attorney General who has the will to act independently of a president under investigation, who has the will to reverse the assault on civil rights set in motion by his predecessor, and has the will to aggressively protect and defend the civil rights of all Americans. We at the Legal Defense Fund, along with our colleagues here today, have very serious doubts that William Barr has that will, and we urge the Senate Judiciary Committee to engage in a full and thorough vetting to properly satisfy its duty to advise and consent. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janae. Next, we'll hear from Michael Collins, Director of National Affairs for the Drug Policy Alliance. Michael?
Hi, everyone. This is Michael Collins. Great to be on the call. Drug Policy Alliance is the leading organization fighting to end the war on drugs. After the nightmare we had with Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, many of us felt that we couldn't go much lower. But William Barr certainly gives Jeff Sessions a run for his money in terms of his desire to pursue the war on drugs. With Sessions, we faced challenges to marijuana legalization, sentencing reform, and an incarceration-only approach to an overdose crisis that is demonstrably a public health issue. Our fear is that we will have the same problems with Barr. This is someone who was Attorney General during the expansion of the war on drugs in the early 90s, who pushed to fill prisons and who is partly responsible for the mass incarceration mess we have today. It's very unlikely that he's changed his mind since the 1990s, not least because he signed on to a letter in 2015 opposing a modest sentencing reform bill, the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act, in which he claimed, quote, "our system of justice is not broken," unquote. The most frustrating thing is that many advocates, ourselves included, spent a lot of time and energy passing a criminal justice reform bill, the First Step Act, which Trump signed into law in late December last year. Much of that legislation has to be implemented by the Attorney General, and putting Barr in that position raises questions about whether this administration ever really cared about criminal justice reform. This is like if President Obama passed healthcare reform, then appointed Ted Cruz as Secretary of HHS. The fox will be guarding the hen house, and that's a real problem. On overdose issues, the consensus politically has been that we need a public health approach to this crisis, yet Barr is someone who has the same mindset as Sessions and is likely to pursue the same failed drug war strategies of locking up drug users and pushing for tough sentences that do nothing to reduce overdose deaths and serve only to increase the prison population, usually through the incarceration of people of colour. Indeed, William Barr's daughter, Mary Daly, is currently the point person on opioid prosecutions at the Department of Justice, and she has stressed the importance of, quote, "aggressive enforcement," unquote, when it comes to the overdose crisis. It's also very Trumpian to have the father and daughter working in the same agency. In a 2001 interview, Barr also seemed to call for the extrajudicial killing of drug traffickers. Here's the quote, open quote, "using the military and drugs was always under discussion. I personally was of the view it was a national security problem. I personally likened it to terrorism. I believe you can use law enforcement to some extent, particularly in the US, but the best thing to do is not to extradite Pablo Escobar and bring him to the United States and try him. That's not the most effective way of destroying that organization," close quote. My conclusion here is that he's advocating for extrajudicial killings, which is deeply troubling, especially given that Trump himself has already called for the death penalty for people who sell drugs like fentanyl. The last thing I'll say is that Sessions was given an easy ride by Republicans during his Senate confirmation process. It was early in the Trump administration. He was a former senator, so he got no tough questions from Republicans. He then had very public spats with Senator Grassley over his opposition to criminal justice reform. Senator Gardner with Colorado fought with him about his position on marijuana legalization, even though we knew before the hearings that Jeff Sessions held these odious positions. Our hope is that in these hearings, Senate Republicans step up and hold Barr accountable on these and other issues, rather than giving him a free pass. They have a constitutional obligation to advise and consent, and they should take that role seriously this time around. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. We'll now hear remarks from Avadeh Mousavian, Legislative Director at National Immigration Law Center. Avadeh?
Thanks so much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Avadeh Mousavian, and I'm the Legislative Director for the National Immigration Law Center. We have been around since 1979 and are the largest national organization dedicated exclusively to advancing and defending the rights of low-income immigrants. It's a pleasure to be here with this esteemed panel of speakers, and thank you to everyone joining for your interest in this topic. We're here today to talk about the serious and wide-ranging concerns about the nomination of William Barr as Attorney General and the threats to all of our rights that his nomination poses. William Barr has a long and deeply problematic record on immigration, spanning nearly 40 years. During his time at DOJ, he prioritized militarization of our border communities and criminalization of migrants through expanded detention. And as we see today, in the midst of a manufactured crisis by the president, our nation's track record of militarizing border communities and criminalizing those seeking to come to the U.S. deeply ignores the root causes of why people come to the U.S. in the first place, whether to be with loved ones or to seek economic opportunities or humanitarian protections. And it causes great harm both to the people seeking to come here, vibrant border communities, and our environment. Barr also created a National Center for Tracking Non-Citizens that serves as a precursor of what we've seen under former Attorney General Sessions, where the DOJ has persistently sought to coerce local law enforcement to do the work of federal immigration enforcement. And Barr also oversaw the detention of Haitian refugees in Guantanamo and subjected HIV Haitian asylum seekers to prolonged and indefinite detention and to an unjustifiably higher standard on their asylum cases. We should all be deeply troubled by an Attorney General nominee who ordered the creation of a detention camp for vulnerable populations of people seeking safety. In addition to the many and profound concerns that William Barr's own track record presents, it's equally alarming that he's lauded former Attorney General Sessions as, quote, an outstanding Attorney General as recently as 2 months ago. Barr has been open in his praise of former Attorney General Sessions, who particularly fixated on stripping immigrants of their rights in ways that range from seemingly benign bureaucratic changes that in fact have radically transformed our immigration system or in brazenly inhumane and publicized ways. Just some of the many examples of Sessions' policies that Barr has implicitly or expressly supported include Sessions' zero tolerance policy that sought to criminalize immigrant parents, most of whom came here seeking safety in the U.S., as justification to separate thousands of small children from their parents and cage them in an effort to coerce these parents into waiving their legal right to claim asylum and to deter others from doing so. Barr explicitly supported the first iteration of Trump's Muslim ban, writing just days after it was issued that he sees, quote, no plausible disputing the order's lawfulness, end quote, and defending it as falling, quote, squarely within both the president's constitutional authority and his explicit statutory immigration powers. This is despite the fact that this ban, even after successful legal challenges, was rescinded and the next version that was revised was blocked by numerous federal courts that found it, quote, that it drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination. Other Sessions policies that Barr could continue to pursue are taking away from survivors of domestic violence and gang violence the ability to claim asylum, stripping immigration judges of their independence and discretion to close cases or adjudicate them on an individualized case-by-case basis, imposing performance-based case quotas on immigration judges at the very same time that they are dealing with unprecedented case backlogs of well over 1 million cases. This is in large part because of the changes under Trump that have allowed for more non-citizens to be indiscriminately targeted for deportation, and because former Attorney General Sessions imposed more and more limits on immigration judges' ability to exercise discretion. And yet another example of Sessions' signature policies that Barr could continue is retaliating against states and municipalities by threatening to withhold federal grants to those localities with constitutionally sound policies that limit their role in federal immigration enforcement in order to promote better community trust and communication. While these threats have been successfully held at bay by numerous federal courts who found that what the current administration is doing to be in violation of the Constitution, Barr's record and vocal support of these more recent bullying tactics under former Attorney General Sessions are a troubling sign. It's the job of the Attorney General to protect civil rights. Since the beginning of its term, this administration has actively sought to undermine the civil rights of people living in this country. And we have no reason to think this or any of the signature policies issued under former AG Sessions will be put in check with the nomination of William Barr. It's crucial that the Senate press Mr. Barr on these important issues and to scour his record to decide if he is fit to be Attorney General of the United States. Even a cursory review is cause for grave concern, and even more so under an administration that has sought to weaponize the role of the Department of Justice and Attorney General to devastate the rights of populations that most need its protection. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Avedeh. Our final speaker is Sharon McGowan, Chief Strategy Officer and Legal Director at Lambda Legal. Sharon?
Thank you, Christine, and I join all of my other in thanking the Leadership Conference for convening this important call. Obviously, there is a lot going on right now, but in some ways, there are no positions in the administration more important and more powerful and with greater ability to affect people's lives than the position of Attorney General. I come to this discussion not only as the legal director of the nation's oldest and largest LGBT litigation organization, but also as a former senior career official in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department and someone who felt that I needed to leave my role in civil service when it was clear that Jeff Sessions was going to take the Department of Justice in the direction that we have seen over the last 2 years. As Janae and Avide have mentioned, you know, Jeff Sessions transformed the Department of Justice from a guardian of civil rights into a weapon of discrimination and bigotry. And what we have seen throughout William Barr's attempts to audition for this position, either through his writings, appearances, and in media, he attempts to pick up and is eager to pick up where Jeff Sessions left off. And as Avide mentioned, you know, there are things about William Barr's record in particular that demonstrate that he truly is sort of cut from the same cloth. You know, his particular legacy regarding the immigrants from Haiti who were seeking asylum is one of the darkest sort of moments in our nation's history with respect to the HIV crisis, a crisis and epidemic in which there were many, many dark days. But his willingness to basically sort of relegate an entire group of people to inhumane conditions and put their lives at risk is in many ways very reminiscent of what we are seeing right now with a Justice Department that is using moralistic arguments and punitive strategies to try and separate out people from this country that this administration believes are undesirable or un-American. And that truly is the most coming out of this administration, the way in which the notion of equal justice under law is truly being undermined at this moment. And it is really important for the Senate to actually stand up and take a stand and help the Justice Department get back on track. There are many, many men and women of the Civil Rights Division and throughout the Justice Department who have, like me, felt that they needed to leave the Justice Department because they were no longer able to engage in the work of the Justice Department with a sense of integrity and belief that they were fulfilling their constitutional oath of office. And William Barr is someone who will continue down the road that Jeff Sessions has taken the department. As Janae mentioned in the beginning, you know, from the outset, this administration has targeted civil rights, but particularly put a target on the back of the LGBT community, targeting transgender students through the rescission of transgender guidance, targeting transgender men and women who wish to serve in our military through a blatantly discriminatory ban on their that is now being litigated by the Department of Justice, and through the reversal of legally sound positions regarding the interpretation of federal law with respect to its coverage of discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, because that is not a policy outcome that this administration prefers. And William Barr's record demonstrates that he, like Jeff Sessions, seeks to weaponize religious liberty arguments as a way to denigrate and re-marginalize the LGBT community in a way that is completely inconsistent with where we are as a nation. He has denigrated non-discrimination laws and suggested that somehow they were just, you know, attempts to override people's moral beliefs as opposed to the way in which they have worked in society to ensure equal participation of all. And as others have noted, you know, he went out of his way to praise those aspects of Sessions' tenure in the Department of Justice, specifically with respect to his targeting of transgender people in this country, it's to have no doubt about what kind of attorney general he would be. And so as we think about, at this particular moment, what it is that we need in an attorney general, what it is that we need from the Department of Justice, William Barr has submitted his application. We have his resume. We have his writing sample. We know exactly what it is that he intends to do. There is no guesswork involved here. He wants to double down and give us 2 more years of the kinds of assault on civil rights that we have seen under Jeff Sessions. And this Senate has an obligation to stand up for the American people and stand up for the notion of justice and ensure that the leadership of this department is handed over to someone who can be trusted to live up to the constitutional ideals of liberty and justice for all. And William Barr, simply on the basis of his record and his statements and his performance to date, is not that person. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you so much, Sharon. We'll now open the line for questions. Operator, can you please open the lines and provide instructions for how to get in the queue?
Certainly. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 now on your touch-tone phone. That is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We'll take a question from Peter White of the Tennessee Tribune. Your line is open.
Hey, folks, thanks for this. Thanks for your very knowledgeable and historical look at this. My question is, it sort of relates to the last speaker, Ms. McGowan, who, you know, said she left the DOJ because when Sessions got there. Could any of you comment on, in terms of the hearing next week, what do you think is going to happen about, you know, the investigation of Trump by the special counsel? Do you think he's going to be challenged on that, about his views about the role of such a person, or about, you know, the particulars of that investigation? I think that's of interest to our readers here in Nashville.
Hi, this is Christine Lucius, and I'll take a first crack at that question, and then others can weigh in as well. I absolutely think it will be a focus. William Barr is a private practice lawyer. He works at a law firm here in D.C., but from that position, he inexplicably wrote a 10-page memo attacking the Mueller investigation. Already the ranking member has submitted questions to him about the origin story behind writing that, who asked him to write it, why he wrote such a memo. This is a man who represents private corporate interests and whose firm has represented foreign interests, including Russian interests. So I absolutely think that will be a focus, because we know from Ranking Member Feinstein's questions already that she is interested. But the other thing I would just say is that, you know, I think many members are concerned about his ability or inability to be independent. There's a perception that he was auditioning for the job by writing this memo attacking the Mueller investigation. And so I do think that will be a focus of many members. What we heard yesterday were Republican members on the Senate Judiciary Committee claiming that he had promised not to interfere with that investigation, but then he also was refusing to meet with Democratic senators who also wanted to have courtesy meetings with him before the hearing. So yesterday alone, there was Republican member messaging about this very issue. But the one thing I would also just say about the Mueller investigation is it's one example of a concern about his commitment to the rule of law. And, of course, our civil rights are dependent on adherence to the rule of law, and our civil rights enforcement will be dependent on whether the next attorney general is actually independent from this president, who has shown no bounds, no civil rights that he wouldn't, frankly, attack. So I think it's both will be a line of inquiry relevant to the Mueller investigation, but it has broader implications as well for our concerns that Mr. Barr will not protect civil rights. Anyone else want to respond to that question?
Hi, this is Janae Nelson from the Legal Defense Fund. I'll just say a few words to underscore what Christine just said about the link between his views about executive power and the Mueller investigation and civil rights. We are submitting questions that we hope the Senate Judiciary Committee will take up during the hearing. They do involve the Mueller investigation, but they also are detailed interrogations of his record on civil rights. And while the Mueller investigation is extraordinarily important, and there's nothing we can say to undermine that importance, it is equally important that we also do a full vetting of his civil rights record, and that should not be buried by the attention that everyone will want to pay to this very salacious and important investigation. But his civil rights record is one that can do enormous harm, as many have already underscored, and have durable effects that last well beyond this administration and well beyond anything that happens to the sitting president. And that should be as significant a focus of inquiry as any other.
Christine, this is Sharon McGowan from Lambda Legal. I just wanted to add sort of one more point that I agree that the Mueller investigation will and should be an important subject of inquiry, but it really does, you know, as others have said, demonstrate sort of one way, but not the only way, in which the independence of DOJ is really what's at stake here. And I just want to remind everyone that this Department of Justice completely and totally abdicated its responsibility to defend the Affordable Care Act from a number of frivolous challenges that have been filed in federal courts throughout the country. And because of that failure, many people actually left the Justice Department. Three career officials from the Justice Department walked away from careers in that organization in response to sort of that move by the Justice Department. And as a result, we are now, you know, in a state of tremendous uncertainty about the status of the Affordable Care Act as a result of a district court decision in Texas. We now have, you know, private law firms needing to intervene to try and defend the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act and the viability of that law, which not only includes very important non-discrimination protections for people, including LGBT people, but it also talks about and guarantees access to health care for people with pre-existing conditions, which is obviously very important, not only for people living with HIV, but women, you know, anyone who's ever been pregnant. You know, obviously this is an issue that motivated voters, that helped them really understand what was at stake, and the Justice Department is a key player in the fate of things like healthcare in this country, the rule of law. And so all of that should absolutely be front and center in terms of whether or not William Barr is going to continue to use the Justice Department as simply an arm of this administration's assault on civil rights, or whether or not it's going to fulfill its constitutional obligation.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you, Janae. Let's move to the next question.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch tone phone. We'll move next to Sarah Lynch of Reuters.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. I wanted to just bring up something kind of more general, and maybe this will come out in the next day or so, because I hear it's starting to trickle in, but I wanted to point your attention to the fact that we haven't received any of William Barr's financial disclosure forms yet. Normally they would be posted on OGE and the ethics pledge, which presumably would deal with the question of his daughter working at the department and how they would avoid conflicts would be dealt with. And I know the OGE is actually shut down due to the government shutdown and everyone's furloughed. So I was wondering if, you know, there were concerns among all of you that the public has not had a chance to see this yet, that apparently the forms are just now starting to trickle in and some senators have seen them, some haven't, and we're just basically days, you know, several business days away from having the hearing, and whether that's unusual and that more time should be given so that people can actually review them thoroughly.
So this is Christine Lucius. I can tell you that is unusual. I worked on many Attorney General confirmation hearings when in my previous job on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it is unusual not to have those with more days in front of the hearing, especially when you have someone who's been in private practice and at a law firm like his that has represented one of Russia's largest financial institutions. And in his previous role before this law firm, he was at Verizon and received an enormous financial payout and led the effort against net neutrality. There's the ethics. There will be significant conflicts of interest questions involving his clients, both at the law firm and his previous client, in addition to the one you flagged about his daughter's role in prosecuting drug crimes. So I do think it is unusual that his financial disclosure forms are not fully in yet. And I will also mention that when it's a law firm partner, there should be transparency about what clients that firm has represented, and I think you'll likely hear questions next week at his hearing about this if there aren't more disclosures coming. And one last thing I would just add, we know that the president was quite frustrated with his last attorney general solely for one reason, which was the fact that he recused himself from the Russia investigation. So we do know that conflicts of interest and recusal are also a really important thing, both to the person who nominated the attorney general, but is a very important thing when we're talking about who is the acting attorney general right now, and the fact that Matt Whitaker has not followed the normal process for consulting with ethics experts in the Justice Department itself. Matt Whitaker has made quite a bit of news of somehow coming up with his own counsel to advise him on ethics that gets around the career officials who really know this area and every previous attorney general has abided by.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
There are. We have a question from Edward Edney from the office of Senator Duckworth.
Good morning. This is actually Gidget from Senator Duckworth's office. Thank you for holding this call this morning. I have a question regarding the timeline that you are discussing. You stated that the confirmation hearing is next week, next Tuesday. When do you anticipate a vote coming to the floor?
So this is Christine. The hearings will be Tuesday and Wednesday, and then typically the Senate Judiciary Committee, they allow time for written questions to be asked. And so I expect that the soonest the bar nomination would be on the floor of the Senate would be in February. But that is dependent on the fact of getting access to records and questions answered in committee. So I think best prediction is the bar nomination is being debated in the full Senate sometime in February, but the precise timing of that depends on the availability of records and questions getting answered in committee. So I think that's our best prediction.
Thank you.
And Christine, this is Sharon McGowan from Lambda. I just want to be able to sort of tie that question back to the previous question about the way in which the Senate Republican leadership has been operating with respect to these nominations. I mean, we are all, you know, sort of gearing up, obviously, for these hearings next week, but there is no reason why next week is set in stone. When records have not been produced, when meetings have not happened, when the government is in the midst of a shutdown that is sort of strangling the livelihoods of American people across this country, there is no reason why this nomination needs to happen next week. And if, in fact, as we have all sort of identified, you know, there are certainly pieces of information that are not yet actually sort of being disclosed and meetings and conversations that are not yet happening, this is completely within the discretion of the new chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham, to actually set this on a timeline that it would allow proper vetting to happen and for other really important business to be taken care of.
Exactly right, Sharon. Is there another question?
There is. We have a question. Once again, to ask a question, press star 1 to ask it. We will move next to Mike Ludwig of Truthout.
Hi. Thanks for having the call. It seems that locking people up in cages, particularly people of color, seems to be a theme here. I wonder if we could elaborate a bit more on Barr's role in the war on drugs in the 90s, early 90s, and how that contributed to mass incarceration. Mr. Collins, you brought this up, but anyone can answer here.
Yeah, sure. I can take that. You know, he came on as Attorney General quite late in the Bush administration, but, you know, he's written papers about, you know, in the early 90s about the need for more incarceration. There's a very extensive interview that I would point people to, which was what I quoted from when I was talking about the extrajudicial killings, which is in one of these like presidential oral history interviews with the Miller Center. You can find it online. He goes into a lot of detail about his views on the war on drugs, you know, what they did during the Bush administration. You know, and as I said, you know, some of it is pretty horrifying. And, you know, I think the question, you know, that senators should be asking him is, has he changed his views at all? You know, a lot of people have changed their views from the 1990s. And like I said, you know, the fact that he is, you know, he was one of two former attorney generals who signed on to that letter that I mentioned. Doesn't feel like he's changed his views. I'm sure we'll find out. But there's a lot of, you know, as indicated by the passage of the recent criminal justice reform bill, there are a lot of members of the Senate Judiciary Committee who care deeply about criminal justice reform, Republicans and Democrats, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to find out more about his plans. But he certainly has a track record as somebody who's a strong proponent of the war on drugs, and the fear is that, you know, under Sessions, there was definitely an escalation of the war on drugs, and, you know, we had hoped that, you know, we would at least get somebody who wouldn't have those same viewpoints. But as I said, it looks like we've got someone who does, and that's a big problem.
And what is, when you're talking about the letter that he signed, that was for the original Grassley's original sentencing reform bill back in like 2015?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Thank you.
Is there another question?
There is. We'll move next to Octavia Rainey of the Carolinian.
Hi. My name is Octavia. I would like to stress the importance of highlighting his track record on civil rights, because that is just so important. So would that be the main thrust of the questioning?
Octavia, this is Christine. We couldn't agree with you more that we believe civil rights needs to be the main thrust when the Senate is considering whether or not William Barr is qualified to be our next Attorney General. We don't know yet whether that will be the primary focus of questioning, but we are urging, there to be coverage of it and those questions to be asked, because of what my colleague Janae focused on earlier in this call, which is there needs to be greater understanding and awareness of all the devastating civil rights rollbacks of the past 2 years. And as well as Mr. Barr's personal record, which raises serious civil rights flags, whether it's ranging from mass incarceration to immigrant justice issues.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there one remaining question?
We do. We have a question from Doug McVeigh of KBOO Radio.
Hi, and thanks for having this call. The interview that Michael Collins referred to, the UVA Miller Center, one of the things that Barr mentioned in that, they were asking about the Rodney King beating the riots in Los Angeles following. Barr in that said, quote, "I did lay a lot of it on gang activity," end quote. Do you see his conflation of civil unrest with organized crime and criminal activity continuing and becoming a problem?
Janae, I wonder if you're still on and want to take a shot at that. Michael, do you want to take it?
I'm sorry. I'm on. I'm just in the airport.
Go ahead, Michael.
I'll see if I need to.
No, you go. I think you're a better place to discuss this.
I'm going through security, so it'd be great if you could go ahead and
No problem. I think what we saw, this is kind of like one of the challenges, that what we saw under Sessions was like a guy who had his, you know, ideas on policies like straight out of the 1980s and the 1990s and hadn't moved forward, and you know, the conflation with, you know, gangs and drugs and immigrants and the sort of deliberate use of these kind of stereotypes and caricatures to pursue, you know, the agenda, and the use of the war on drugs to, you know, go after communities of color. The comments are certainly concerning. There's a lot of comments that are concerning in that that interview that you mentioned. And again, like, the hope is that these are, you know, this is brought up in the hearing, these are highlighted in the hearing, and that he's held accountable.
This, Christine, thanks. I would just add, too, that the invocation of gangs is often used to justify criminalizing both immigrants and people of color. And so, I do think that there is a lot of provocative and troubling things said in that oral history. I think a lot of media is trying to sift through all the material in that one lengthy interview, but it does absolutely raise concerns about the past 2 years, the rollbacks on constitutional policing. And one of the most important things that the Justice Department does do is protect people's rights when it comes to its interactions with police officers who are supposed to serve all of our communities. So I think that phrasing in that one interview is revealing and should be an area of concern and questioning raised at his hearing next week.
Thanks for that, Christine. This is Abida with National Immigration Law Center. Just to add to that, I think that narrative has also applied to so many other policies. As Christine said, it's been used, that sort of viewpoint and lens through which he has seen his role in policymaking and defending certain policies, is that's really been a narrative that's run consistently throughout this current administration. When we heard, for example, Jeff Sessions trying to justify prolonged and cruel and just devastating separation of children who were literally torn from the arms of their parents when they were not complying with court orders to reunite those families, part of their justification was to try to suggest that the parents were somehow unfit. So there's this recurring theme. I mean, that's similar to the kinds of the National Database Tracking Initiative that really is a precursor of a lot of what we saw under Sessions in trying to frame immigrants and criminality as interchangeable concepts and from an administration that also completely ignores their role in harming immigrant communities, including young children who are dying in federal custody. So I think that's the lens through which a lot of these policies in Barr's own right, but also that he, a legacy that he could be perpetuating that, you know, that is under Sessions as well. And it's cause for enormous concern.
Thank you, Abadeh. Are there any further questions?
We do. We have a follow-up from Peter White of the Tennessee Tribune.
Go ahead, Peter.
Hi. Thank you. This is for, I suppose it would be for Janae or Sharon. I want a lawyer's opinion. Okay, so they have this temporary guy in there, and Barr gets confirmed. Okay, let's set it up that way. Now, what's the process in terms of Mueller's firing? I mean, can the president do that? And if he's got a yes man at DOJ, it just happens? Or if, as you all have mentioned, Barr actually is independent, can he somehow stop that from happening? Could you just run down what the legal deal is on a, you know, special investigator?
Sharon, are you familiar with the regulations that they would use?
I do not have them at my fingertips, so I would be hesitant to say that I could provide a definitive sort of blow by blow, but I know there have been some materials, and perhaps we could sort of direct you to them sort of offline. But, you know, I do think that, you know, the larger sort of message here is that, you know, Barr's role as sort of the person in the Department of Justice who would be overseeing the investigation is somewhat contingent on there being an investigation that's happening. So this is another reason why, you know, again, rather than racing ahead with an attorney general hearing, you know, there have been many calls to codify and protect the special counsel from interference at the highest levels. That is another thing that is should obviously sort of be on people's minds. It was very front and center for Senator Jeff Flake before he left, and yet there's been sort of an unwillingness to actually and take on faith, you know, this notion that somehow Mueller will be allowed to continue. So it's another thing that is absolutely sort of looming in the backdrop. And while there are sort of certain procedures that are in place, I'm not even confident that would be how it would all play out in this administration. That doesn't necessarily always follow the rule book.
Okay, thanks.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 to ask your question. We have a follow-up from Mike Ludwig of Truthout.
Yeah, I just, you know, I was thinking about what we heard about the immigration database, and also I was thinking about Barr's role in NSA surveillance, and I was wondering if we could go a little bit deeper into the surveillance issue, particularly with immigrants and the police. You know, we've got consent decrees being revoked under Sessions. We've got, you know, people are concerned about mass surveillance regardless of what kind of community they come from. And I just would like to know a little bit more about what happened with the immigrant surveillance database, and if anyone wants to talk about law enforcement surveillance more broadly.
This is Abida, excuse me, this is Abida with NILC. I can speak just to the immigrant piece of it and welcome others to chime in on other aspects of it. I mean, in the early weeks and months of the Trump administration, DOJ initiated a couple of what were ultimately PR campaigns to try to denigrate and criminalize immigrant communities by setting up this, you know, office that was intended for victims of crimes committed by non-citizens, and also in attempting to shame localities in order to increase their likelihood of complying with illegal civil detainers that they were issuing by reporting what was ultimately inaccurate information around localities not complying with those. So they've had a several attempts at really transparent PR campaigns that ultimately died quick and quiet deaths because they were so unsuccessful and people saw them for what they were. But I think, you know, it really shows an unrelenting persistence that they will use any narrative to try to justify policies, whether it's, you know, surveilling immigrants or putting erroneous information about people in databases. I mean, I think the fact alone that you see that multiple federal courts have held that the administration has overreached its authority, that it's in violation of the Constitution by trying to threaten to withhold law enforcement resources as a bullying tactic to get localities to do the work of federal ICE enforcement. That just shows it's not about them really caring about being on the right or wrong side of the law. It's that they see this as something that they really want to use they're really showing that they want to use retaliation as a law enforcement tool. So from our perspective, you know, some of these initiatives may not have actually taken hold. They may not have actually, you know, continued, but the fact that they're really persistent in pursuing multiple channels for finding ways to inject this criminalization narrative, that again is really, I think, the deeply problematic part that really signals that Barr will not only potentially perpetuate some of Sessions like signature policies, but will, you know, he's been thinking about these same things for quite a long time in his own right as well.
And this is Christine. I would just mention that the ACLU put out an article on Gizmodo.com calling Barr the godfather of American surveillance hell. So if you want more information on his involvement in what was the precursor to mass data collection in his last run at the Justice Department, the Gizmodo article that ACLU did points out a lot of those pieces of his background.
Okay, thank you.
I think we have time for one final question. Is there one more?
There are no further questions, but press star one. And it appears that we have no further questions at this time.
So I just want to thank everyone for joining us today on this important call on William Barr's nomination to be Attorney General. If you have any questions or would like to contact any of the speakers, please email press@civilrights.org. We thank all of you for joining us and thank our wonderful speakers.